Welcome to Merchman Seed's Cup of Joe. On this episode, Ben shows a couple soil moisture maps. He also has an update on weather forecasts by Eric Snodgrass. Dylan and Avery have a recap from our sales team meeting this week. They learn lots of new information from our starting line seed treatment, Trunemco, wheat and alfalfa management, and more. Dylan updates us on projects he's currently working on at test plots in West Point.
Hi, this is Joe Merchman. Welcome to Merchman Seed's Cup of Joe. Today we have Ben, Avery, and Dylan, and I'm going to let Ben start the discussion.
Yep, so probably at the time of this recording or somewhere around thereabouts, we're going to have some nice soaking rain that comes in. So I kind of wanted to hit on a couple different things, where we're at from a soil moisture percentage deeper down in the profile and where we are in the top 4 inches. And as everybody knows, the top 4 inches fluctuates a lot quicker than what the deeper profile holds. So I kind of wanted to get everybody caught up on where we are at there. So the first map is the 0 to 4 inch. You can see here in the southeast Iowa portion of where we are at. We've had some nice rains in the month of March. Not everybody else in our sales footprint has had that amount of rainfall, but we are kind of in a situation now where we are at normal levels or slightly wetter than normal. So that is the 0 to 4 inch. You can definitely take a look at that and see where you fall in that area. And then I have a 0 to 100 centimeter or 2 foot soil depth. And the picture is not as a grave in the deeper profile. We don't have as many of the dark reds because a lot of areas have caught an inch to an inch and a half, and that has percolated down through the profile. And, you know, we're not in the yellows, but a lot of areas are in that light orange color when it comes to soil moisture capacity. So what I wanted to do from this point is move to ag-wx.com, which is Nutrien's, that's their weather page that Eric Snodgrass organizes. And I kind of wanted to show where we are at and what the forecast kind of looks like from a volumetric soil perspective. So if we go to the this ECMWF volumetric soil moisture percentage, if you pull this up 50%, so we are right here at 48% in the top right hand corner, that would be total saturation. So when the field is at a gravity drainage point, so where the water is no longer holding on to soil colloids and we have free movement downward, that is at that 50% soil moisture. And as we see here, this is a 4 inch, so it would be similar to what I was looking at with the first picture that I showed, the zero to 10 centimeter slide. So this paints a little bit different picture. This probably takes into account a little bit of the rain that we've seen, but so the slide bar down here at the bottom is showing you what the ECMWF, which would be the European model, is going to give us for rain. And again, like I said, the 0 to 10 centimeter or the 4 inch volumetric soil is just that surface. So this is the stuff that is the most easily changed. So by Monday, the 25th of March, we can see that we have some moisture that is getting into the mid 30s, low 40s on where we're getting for moisture. So we're going to see some nice differences in the little bit longer term forecast here. And we're going to see some soaking rains across the Midwest. That's definitely going to help areas that have been in those darker reds, like I showed you on the moisture percentile from earlier. So if I slide that back, you know, we're kind of in this point right now where not a lot of the area in the state of Iowa particularly has abundance of moisture in the top profile, but we're going to be seeing some rains that are definitely going to get things charged up just in time to get the planters rolling when it comes to a temperature standpoint. So
it's good news.
Yep. And I also talked about this in the past as well. This volumetric soil moisture percentage, they do this on a zip code by zip code area in this slideshow, and you can get down to like Denmark, Iowa, Weaver, Iowa, whatever town that you're in. You can go in and look at what the prediction is for where the soil moisture is at. And anytime that we fall below 20%, universities and private industry talk about how if you're lower than 20% volumetric moisture, it's going to be really, really hard to get corn and soybean seeds to get out of the ground. So this is promising.
Literally don't have enough moisture to sprout that seed.
Correct.
Yep. And by the way, some of those northern areas are going to get snow rather than rain.
Yep. But there's going to be at least, I was listening to his video this morning, and anybody can go to this this ag-wx.com, and then he has a half hour, 20 minute video. If you click on this link right here, it gets you the most up-to-date video that he has. But he was talking about there's going to be at least an inch of snow in, or at least an inch of moisture in this snow, if not 2 inches, in certain parts of northern Iowa, southern Minnesota, and Wisconsin. So not ideal probably for what most guys are thinking this time of year, but moisture is moisture, right?
Right, and it melts fast, so.
That is correct. So the other thing that I wanted to hit on is temperature just a little bit. This is another tool that I use when we're rolling around this time of year, when we're looking at what soil temperatures are doing. This is a 16-day GFS, so it's the American model versus the European model. So this is just a slide bar of where we are at. So this is 1 a.m. Central Time on Friday, and the black line that is the contour between the light green and the dark brown is the 50 degree soil temp line, and the blue line between the greens and the blues is the freezing line. So if you drag this slide bar across the top, looks like by Monday night this coming week, we see some 50 degree soil temps that'll jump up into our portion of the state. And then as you drag that line across, we flirt with 50, but there's gonna be a couple days in the very first part of the month of April that are gonna hold 50, but we're gonna keep continuing to drop back down. So we don't see any of those perfect planting conditions where we're gonna be at 50 and holding 50. When you look at the 2 week outlook on where we are at for temperature, it's gonna be one of those things that we just need to kind of keep an eye on. I don't think that we will see huge planting windows. I think guys that are on the super aggressive side may try to plug something in the ground that first week of April, but I really think that we are the second week of April before anybody's pulling the trigger on this, because this is the 15-day outlook from the GFS, and this is the 15-day outlook from the ECMWF, which talks about your different temperatures. So we're going to be right at normal for that time of year. Normal isn't 60 degrees every day, so you're going to just see normal temperatures.
So you're saying right now is a perfect time to go on a 10-day vacation for farmers.
Spring break, assuming you got the planter and everything ready to
exactly,
go.
Exactly, exactly.
Yes, so I don't foresee a lot of that's going to be happening in the next 2 weeks, but I definitely think with the soil temps that are flirting with that 50s, you're going to see some guys, if it's dry enough, and we're going to see some moisture. So if it's dry enough, you're going to see some guys push just a little bit the first part of April, but I think the window looks more clear that the second week of April is going to be probably when the flags drop.
Yep.
Hammer down.
That's right.
Hammer down, and we got a lot of work to do on the sales side of things. I'll tell you that.
What do you got going on?
Well, we've had a busy week here in West Point. We had our salespeople come in, and we had an awesome couple days of meetings. Luckily you guys brought in Rosens to give us an update on our seed treatment, Starting Line Plus. And it's just a great reminder that it takes, 8 to 9 different companies? Nine different companies to make up our seed treatment. They advise us that competitors are tied to certain other companies and they have to use their own whole lineup. And it just gives us that competitive edge there out in the field. And, it shows the farmer that we truly want what's best for them, what's going in the ground on our seed. So Rosen's touched on a lot of great things, and a new product to look at is Trinimco, which we've had it on our seed treatment for the last 2 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so leading the edge and seeing the promise that product brings to the farmers and giving them the return on investment there. We had Mitchell from America's Alfalfa come and give us an update about the alfalfa industry, and I'll tell you what, we've capitalized on that. I think Cindy here brought in a couple pallets of alfalfa last week, and I think we're reordering more alfalfa because it's just going off the shelves. And you touch on, people think, hey, we can get the alfalfa in the ground. And Mitchell touched on here is like, he's like, have the most confidence. April 1st is the first time you should probably pull the window on planting alfalfa. And just talking to us about soil preparation, making sure you can take that basketball and pound it off the ground and it bounce back up to you, making sure residue management, seeding depth, and all that is very key for a good alfalfa stand and companion crops. I was wrong at it, and when I planted a couple alfalfa fields in my past, I did a bushel and a half votes. Well, he said to, you should probably bring that down to a bushel to maybe a little less. Great. And so that was a good notes to fine tune. Talking about after cuttings, if you really want to be a productive alfalfa grower, putting AMS on there after each cutting just to help boost that alfalfa for tonnage.
And he was talking about it takes a little bit for the nitrogen fixing bacteria to kick in, so a little bit of nitrogen right after that cutting kind of jump starts that regrowth process. Yep.
100 pounds, right?
So yeah, 100, 120 pounds, I think, is what he was hitting on.
Yep, so you're getting 24 pounds of nitrogen and 26 pounds of sulfur.
Yeah, and, you know, Mitchell's very dairy or, you know, focused, and some of us are beef focused, and that was what I loved about what this meeting is. You guys had him come in and say, hey, we have a majority of beef producers here. What is the situations we need to set up for them? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, getting down in my territory and into Missouri and all that, it was great just to hear that focus. Instead of, you know, talking about high quality dairy production, what do the beef producers want? Hey, how can America's alfalfa fit their needs?
You talked about that adding 2 pounds of grass, no more than 2 pounds, because grass gets thicker.
Yep.
So he said, don't overdo it. Let it come in as it goes, you know.
Yeah. And I know farmers have that hard time, like you said, when do I terminate? Well, there's a certain time that you got to terminate it. And if you feel like you had one more year and you thin, like you said, come in and add some grass and just get one more year. But
his keynote on that one that made me smile is every farmer that wants to make it last one more year regrets it because they should have started the stand over the year before, like their gut feeling said. Yeah. So
exactly. And what's awesome about Mitchell is he wants to be in front of the customers. So if you, like, if I ever have that farmer that asks, I can call Mitchell and he'll be in there mm-hmm. within 48 hours and we can talk to that farmer. And Mitchell's just wicked smart. I'll tell you what, he's cool.
That's an understatement.
he's a alfalfa guru, no doubt about it.
You talk about Amy, you talk about Mitchell. You know, we have some amazing people that help us determine and help us on our product. And so we surround ourselves by the smartest people. And I think that's what sets Merchman Seeds apart sometimes.
I couldn't agree more.
Well, and something to add to it, that with the alfalfa, now we're starting to see those troubles with not making it through winter. He really talks about September 15th needs to be the last day. You think about cutting, because we need that regrowth, that 6 to 8 inches of regrowth to make it through winter. So like right now, we're talking about new seeding, but we need to focus on making sure we're not cutting too late, because now we're going to see those problems come up.
Yeah. And like height of, you know, beef quality hay versus dairy yep. quality A, you know, he touched on it. Dairy quality A, you can let that alfalfa go to 27 inches tall. But beef, you know, you want a little bit more tonnage. You don't need as high as quality. So go to 32. And then how he gave us, like, if you can structure your cuttings perfectly, I mean, like, consistency.
Yep, right around that 28 days
yep.
is what really peaks.
Yeah, if Mother Nature cooperates, you're all good to go.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
It's this, believe it or not, that's the same cycle as the moon, 28 days. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I took a lot of notes. I'm looking at my alfalfa sheet here, and, you know, we have some alfalfa products going out of the market. We're bringing in some new ones, and I mean, just, I'm excited for the future.
Yep. And the majors, like as Mitchell hit last year, or if you missed out on two weeks ago's episode, the majors are getting out of the alfalfa game. We have the best genetic supplier, America's Alfalfa, backed by Forage Genetics in the industry. And the majors getting out.
Yeah, the only one with Roundup Ready Alfalfa. They're the only trait supplier with Roundup Ready Alfalfa. You know, Forage Genetics, which is America's Alfalfa, is a brand of theirs. So that's unique to them. And then also the Harv Extra, you know, where you get the higher quality and higher tonnage, and take a 4-cutting system and reduce it to a 3-cutting and get the same amount of tonnage and same and dairy quality.
And the Ultra Cut, you know, the new red design and all that, and very, very well packaged.
Probably. Yeah, if you want to talk alfalfa, we got a good story.
Which he was just on, 2 weeks ago?
Yep, you can go back to that episode, and it's definitely worth watching.
Very.
One of the other things that Amy mentioned that I think is key for people to talk about is the henbit. And
yes.
As I drive back and forth, what was she kind of talking about on henbit?
Dylan, you take away.
Oh, I was not there.
Okay. Oh, sorry. Yeah. You talk about, I remember just one of the stories off.
It's that purple flower. Yeah. That purple flower. That's out. You know, my city friends, they say, "Oh, I love those pretty flowers the farmers planted out there." And I go, "That's not necessarily a good thing."
Yeah, my wife. I was driving to dinner one day with my wife 2 years ago, and down on the bottoms, this whole field was just covered with henbit, and it was pretty. I'll tell you what, it was pretty. And she's like, "That is just beautiful." I said. And being a weed scientist, I'm like, no. They needed to be fall applying some herbicides. They need to take care of it. But I never knew that henbit was a preference for soybean cyst nematodes.
Yep.
And I was like, that just hit me harder. I'm like, oh, wow. We really need to focus on if you know you're going into that soybean rotation. And yep. She talked about soybean cyst nematodes can survive in the soil for 7 to 8 years. Right. And I'm like, wow, fall herbicide applications for anything needs to be a priority.
Well, and they call that a green bridge. So anytime that you have a growing crop and then you have weeds that are in the same rotation, if you don't take care of the weeds, it's a green bridge to the following year. So when you're looking at a like henbit, which doesn't care if it's in corn or soybean rotated ground, you know, you're constantly have that product there for the SCN. So the guys that have fields that are hit the plateaus, as we like to call them in soybeans, where you can't break that 50, you can't break that 55, you know, maybe SCN, something you need to be looking at controlling. So.
Yeah, and that's why we put the Trunemco in our starting line plus as another additive besides the PI88788. And now, Ben, you're putting in a lot of P-Kings.
Yep.
Combined with Trunemco, you know, all of a sudden you got multiple modes of action against controlling cyst nematode, which is the number one most devastating disease. It takes away more yield than any other problem. It's really not a disease. It's an insect infestation, roundworm, but it is slowly takes away, and well, I call them little sucking vampires, you know, because they're just basically pulling out all your nutrients and all your energy out of that plant. And so the whole industry in general, in the soybean industry, is trying to move to P-Kings and then looking at seed treatments as a way to basically fortify that resistance and make it last longer.
Another thing I want to add was a great question was asked when she mentioned that topic. Well, what about our dealers was like, what about cover crops? Is there any other plants out there that we are initially putting out there for soil health or whatever that can, you know, be a
green bridge
at well? And she mentioned that soybean cyst nematodes prefer
square stem,
the mint family, correct?
Yep. So anything that has a square stem on the bottom, just like the henbit does in that mint family, is a host for the soybean cyst nematode.
So you're actually building up your cyst nematodes when they shouldn't be active.
Yeah, exactly.
You're getting more generations in because a soybean cyst nematode is not just one generation, it's generation. I don't know exactly how many they can have in a year. Do you know, Ben, exactly?
It's based off growing degree. Yeah. So, Google.
But yeah, it's just, it is something that you can manage that. And like you said, it's done in the fall.
And she feels like in the years to come, it's going to be become a bigger problem, a bigger focus for agriculture. So,
We're getting to epidemic proportions right now because the PI88788 is not holding them back now. So, we're basically out there without protection. And so, go to Peking. Make sure you use Trunemco if you are using PI88788, and just give it everything you got. And that's one of the things I know, Ben, you've been really focused on soybean cyst nematodes, and we're staying ahead of it as best we can.
That is correct. Question I have for you, Dylan, is what were you doing before we were filming this, and why is jointed wheat important?
Yeah, so I sprayed Husky on the plots in West Point to get rid of the henbit and the other winter annuals that were kind of popping through. And with wheat, if you cut it off at the base. If the stems are hollow, that means if you would run the sprayer or anything over, the wheat would have a lot harder time trying to stand back up. So if you were spraying Husky or another form of herbicide on the wheat, that we need to make sure that it's not jointed yet. Otherwise, you might have some stand issues that you don't want to see with the sprayer tracks and them getting run over.
Right. So there's a key timing there where we go from tillering to jointing, and that you're exactly right. Once we see the hollow stems, that means the head is above that line, which is the growing point, which is the grain. So we want to make sure we have herbicides applied before then, your 2,4-D, your dicamba, your Harmony, your Husky, whatever you're using. You want to make sure you have that done by then. And if you don't have your nitrogen on, this is like the last call for alcohol at the bar in college town. And thankfully, we weren't there yet, but there was a few stems that were just starting to open up so the head could be coming through at the soil line. So the weather's cool. The wheat's not going to be growing very fast. So if you don't have your herbicides on, if you don't have your nitrogen down, now would be a good time to be looking at getting it done.
And the wheat that you were looking at was planted early. I mean, it might be a little bit ahead of locally here what wheat is.
Correct. So the last thing that I have before we move on, unless you two have any other things to add, is one of the things that Mitchell talked about was alfalfa stands, and this is part of his reasoning for waiting until April 1st to be planting alfalfa. Alfalfa seedlings, when they're coming out of the ground, if they are exposed to 24 degree temperatures for 4 or more hours, they will die off and you have to replant. So be looking in the forecast for the lows in the 24s. Frost damage on soybeans, and I don't know of anybody locally. I know we have some guys in southern Illinois and Arkansas that have soybeans in the ground, but soybeans that are subject to 27 degree temperatures or lower for 2 hours, that's our temperature where if the seedling is out of the ground, we're going to be looking at potentially replanting. And we kind of talked about it just a little bit, but in the jointing stage that Dylan just described, we can get down to 24 degrees for 2 hours. So if we're below 24 degrees in for 2 or more hours in the morning, that's when we can start to see that heading damage. When you're in the tillering stage, it has to get clear down below 10 to 12 degrees before we're going to hurt that wheat too bad. So,
and one of the things to remember, I believe the standard temperature is taken at, 5 foot above the ground, not at ground level. So if your ground temperature is a little bit warmer, the air temperature, when you get down to those numbers, it may not be exactly that at the ground. So, because there is a difference in height, you know, where they take the temperature. I think it's around 4 or 5 feet is where the temperature's normally taken.
Yep, that's a good note to
So if it gets down to 24 or whatever the number is that you're worried about, it may not be that at ground level. So.
And that's why I think they talk about the 2 hours or the 3 hours, because you're subjecting that to winds and things like that. So there's some microclimate things that can change that. But those are some good rules of thumb that I was thinking about. If you're worried about your wheat, you're worried about your alfalfa, you're worried about soybeans that you already have in the ground, those are some temperatures. And we'll post the links to all this stuff so that if you guys want to go dig into it further, you can dig into it further.
And one more thing about alfalfa he mentioned is, you know, if you had your fall planted alfalfa and you think your stand's a little low and you need to come and put some more in there, we always worry about ototoxicity.
Correct.
It takes 12 months before ototoxicity kicks in to a level that you know, you're alarmed not to come back in and thicken that stand. So.
Yep. And ototoxicity comes from the leaves. Basically, they fall on the ground. If you plant a seed in it, it will either not grow, or if it does grow, it's like a runt pig.
Yep.
And you can thicken a stand up within 12 months of the initial seeding.
Yep.
But after that, you really got to be out 12 months before you can go back to alfalfa or put alfalfa back in that field.
And he's honestly pushing it to 24 months to put in on your crop rotation.
Yep. Some good points. Well, that brings us to the corny jokes. Please stay. Don't leave. I tried a little bit harder this week to try to get something that would maybe put a smile on your face. And so I figured, go back to the basic bar jokes, because they always seem to work, So anyhow, when you go into a bar during happy hour, sometimes they have a little snacks around, So anyhow, think about that, okay? A man walks into a bar and orders a drink. A minute later, he hears, "You look great. Have you lost weight?" He looks around, but there's no one near. Again, a minute later, he hears, "You don't look a day over 30. He looks around again, but no one is around him. So he asks the bartender, "Did you hear that?" And the bartender says, "Yeah, it's the peanuts. They're complimentary." Okay.
That was pretty good.
Okay. All right. One more. All right. And this one here. you know, farmers are conservative, you know what I'm saying? Some city folks even say they're maybe even a cheapskate or a tightwad. Well, yeah. So I came up with this one, okay? Not personally, but I found it. Okay, a millionaire, a construction worker in a hard hat, and a cheapskate are at a bar. When they get their beers, they notice there's a fly in each mug. The millionaire politely asks the bartender for another beer. Then he sips the new one. The construction worker with the hard hat just spills out a little bit, gets rid of the fly, starts drinking. And now it's the cheapskate's turn. He sticks his hand in the beer, grabs the fly by the wings, and shouts, "Spit it out! Spit it out!" So there you go. Anyhow, think about that one. All right. Appreciate everybody tuning in today and listening or watching. We sincerely appreciate your business. If you need seed debt this spring, we can take care of you. We hope your family is safe and healthy, and we'll see you next week.